So how are you doing with the story of God and Abraham? We're in the middle of a series, aren't we? And we're in about week four, I think. What's stuck with you so far? I guess one thing you will remember is the catchphrase for our series, which is the memory verse, God is faithful to all his promises and loving towards all he has made. And if we've been seeing how this has been being played out in the life of Abraham. So where have we got to? We'll sit back for 3 minutes and I'll just recap you the story and remind you of what we've done the last few Sundays. And sometimes in the talk, in the time that we're talking about Abraham, he's called Abram all the way through. But I know that every now and again I slip. So, all right, he's called Abram at this point in the story. So, after the great flood, after the people had made a great attempt to reach the heavens by building the Tower of Babel to make a name for themselves, after God had scattered the people and reminded him that he was the Lord, then came Abram. Taken by his father, they set off for Ur, but they settled before they got there. And they made Haran their home temporarily. We don't know why. Maybe Dad was too old or too unwell to go further. So they settled. And then God. God, who had been there from the beginning, spoke again, this time to Abraham. He called him and he gave him a promise. Leave your country, leave your people, and go to the land that I will show you. And I will. In our lives, so often God calls us and then he promises and equips us. So don't wait to obey God until you feel equipped, because it might not happen. And we kind of hope it doesn't happen, because God calls and then he equips. And that teaches us, doesn't it, to walk by obedience and faith and trust and not in our own strengths. So off goes Abraham. With a God who has promised him blessing and abundance. He promises him things that aren't common sense. Do you remember I said last time? God's promises aren't common sense. He promises to make him, at his ripe old age, a father of many nations. God's promises aren't reasonable and they're not rational. The other week, do you remember, we looked at the promises that God had given to all of us, and some of you took things home to remind you that God is faithful to all his promises. And then what happened? Abraham was trekking off to the land that God was leading him to. Disaster. A famine in the land. So where's God's promise now? Where's this God who's supposed to be looking out for them? What chance of being a great nation do they have when they're literally starving? Who was holding the memory of the promise that God had given Abraham? Apparently no one. They appear to have forgotten. So they think, well, we better just sort ourselves out. Let's go to Egypt. There's loads of food there. By the way, we need to lie a little bit to keep Abraham safe. Let's pretend that Sarai is Abraham's sister. That will make sure. So they went. But God stepped in again and moved him on from Egypt. No, Abraham, I didn't tell you to go to Egypt. So off they went again, and they got to the spot where they'd been before they went to Egypt. Abraham saw the altar that he'd built, and he remembered God, and we read that he called on the name of the Lord. Now, the land couldn't support all of the family that Abraham and his nephew Lot's family and animals were, so he and Lot decided to split. And Abraham gave Lot the choice of the land. Which way do you want to go? Said Abraham. I'll go the other way. And then we see two different paradigms for making important life decisions. Lot looked horizontally, with eyes of materialism and sensibleness and logic. And he saw the fertility and the richness of the land. He saw the wealth of the cities to trade with. And he decided there was no contest. I'm going this way. We do that too, don't we? But God said to Abraham lift your eyes from where you are. In other words, don't look horizontally, look vertically. Lift your eyes to God. Take account of the presence of God. And God said to him, go, walk through the length and breadth of the land, for I am giving it to you. In effect, he said, step out, walk in faith, and as you step, I will walk with you and deliver my promises. So Abraham walked, and he moved his tents to live near the trees of Mamre. Mamre was an Amorite ally of Abraham's. I'd never knew that before. And once he got there, he built an altar to the Lord. We don't lead altars anymore, do we? That thing is not an altar. It's a communion table. And in a minute, later on in this story, you'll see the amazing reason why we don't need an altar anymore. The chapter we didn't read last week was the chapter about Lot, because Lot went off and discovered actually the people that he was with were pretty wicked people. They got into lots of fights. And in the end, they were rescued by Abraham. It says Abraham rescued them with all their stuff and all his relatives and took him back to safety again. And then here we are in chapter 15. So shall we pray as we start? Father, as we come to the next part of your story with Abraham, will you teach us, write your truths and your specific words to each of us in our hearts, and help us to water it and treasure it and obey it. Amen. Okay, verse 1. The word of the Lord came to Abraham in a vision. Do not be afraid, Abraham. I'm your shield and your very great reward. That was a follow-up promise to the original one, where he says, firstly to Abraham, I will bless you and make you a great nation. Abraham didn't get it, and neither would we, because he says to God, what can you possibly give me? I'm childless. That means my servants will get to inherit whatever I have. How can you make me a great nation? No, says God. Look, let me show you. Look at the heavens, count the stars. So shall your offspring be. So he reminded Abraham of his original promise. When you sense that God has promised you something, wait and look for the signs of it. Ask again if you must. But more importantly, thank God for his promise and look for the answer. Look for it. I think of it as praying it into being. Because do you remember our memory verse? God is faithful to all his promises. So you don't need to have a prayer meeting to ask God to be with you. He's already promised he will be with us always. So have the prayer meeting, but use it to thank God for his promises, not to ask him to be with you. You might want to ask him to help you know and to see that he's with you, but don't ask him to be with you, because God is faithful and he has promised. So in verse 6, we read, after seeing the stars and counting them all, Abraham believed the Lord. And God takes his faith and treats him, because of his faith, as though he was righteous. And he reminded Abraham of what his intentions were. I am the Lord, I've brought you out of Ur to give you this land. So Abraham, having received God's promise, having been declared righteous for his faith, guess what he said to God next? He said, but how can I know that I'll take possession of it? Is this a comedy or what? He's so like us, isn't he? Isn't that fascinating? How can I really know? Does God get cross and rather fed up? He doesn't, does he? He makes a plan. God says to Abraham, bring me a heifer and a goat and a ram, 3 years old, with a dove and a pigeon. So Abraham did. And Abraham knew what to do with them. Notice that God didn't tell him what to do with them. Abraham knew. He cut each of them up into two equal parts, and then he laid them like tram lines, parallel lines. And many of you will know what's happening, that this is a covenant ceremony, something that Abraham was very familiar with. In those days, you didn't make a covenant, you cut a covenant. Today, we talk about cutting a deal, don't we? Well, sometimes we do. We cut a deal, and that comes from this idea of cutting a covenant. So you cut the animals in two, and then the blood from the severed animals kind of ran towards each other. So you've got this kind of passage of the blood trickling. We've had two weddings this weekend, and you can see we had a big one here yesterday that Judith led. And the bride and groom make promises, don't they? They say, I take you for richer, for poorer, in sickness and in health. What if one partner says, but how will I know, sovereign groom, that you'll give me these things? How will I know? So they sign a legal document, the wedding register, the evidence of the promise that they've made. And when you sign, there's a consequence if you break your word. Back in the day, people didn't live in a written culture, they lived in a story culture. I guess signing on a piece of paper was for wimps, because these people acted out the covenant and the consequence of breaking it. So Abraham thought he knew what God intended. He thought that God intended to make a covenant ratification ceremony, if you like, with Abraham to demonstrate the truth of his promise. But what he didn't figure out was what was actually going to happen. Because normally, there are two people involved in the covenant, and they would pass through the blood between the two lines. And in effect, they're saying, if I don't keep the terms of this promise, may what has happened to these unfortunate animals happen to me. May I be slain and trampled to dust underfoot. And we know from history in those days that if a king entered a covenant with a lesser person, either they both walk through or just the lesser person would walk through. And that's a sign of sealing promise. So we've got to verse 12 now, I think. As the sun was setting, a deep sleep fell upon Abraham. Thick and dreadful darkness came over him. It overwhelmed him. It crushed him to the ground. And then God spoke to him, "Know for certain." And he told him more of what was going to happen. He told him that his descendants, the Israelites, would be exiled to a country that wasn't their own. So you'll know that was Egypt. You'll know they'll be there as slaves for 400 years. And then they return to claim their land. So note that Abraham himself never received or owned any land other than the land that he and Sarah were buried in, which was a little tiny plot. But his descendants inherited a huge amount of land, and Michael gallantly read all of the land from the river of Egypt to the great river Euphrates. So at that moment, in the midst of the darkness, a searing streak of light appeared, spewing fire and smoke and sparks. It was the presence of God, described as the smoking firepot and the flaming torch. They're the same words that were used at the top of Mount Sinai. They're the same words that were used for the pillar of smoke and the pillar of fire that the Israelites followed when they were in the desert, you remember? Same words, God himself. Now, it wasn't just the presence of God that astounded Abraham when he came to, but it was what this presence actually did, because we read it passed between the pieces of the animals. So God himself passed through the blood. And here's the reason it was so incredible. That is the gospel. 4,000 years before Jesus, that was the gospel. So here's what's going on, I think, with a bit of help from other people that I've read. There are always two promises with trusting God, aren't there, with living confidently. The first problem is But Lord, how can I know about you? How can I know? How can I trust your promises? How can I know you'll come through for me? So what God does in response to that question is he appears and he passes between the pieces. So what he's saying to Abraham and to us is, I have promised to bless you, Abraham, to be your God, to bring salvation to you, to fulfill these outrageous promises I've made to you. And if I don't do this, may my immortality and my power be cut off and destroyed. May my body be ripped to pieces and trampled in the dust. Because that's what the covenant, that's what people were saying when they passed between these dead animals. So that's amazing. But that's not all, because Abraham looks at God and in a sense he says, wow, well, all right, but that's not the only problem I've got. You know, it's fine, how amazing, how wonderful that you have made this promise and that you pass through the pieces. But I guess when it comes right down to it, I never thought you'd break your promises. But how do I know about me? The real problem is, I believe you'll be my God, but how am I going to be your person? How can I deliver what you've asked of me? How many times will you give me another chance before you get fed up and I've blown it? What about me? But here's the thing. God walked through the pieces alone. He didn't say, now Abraham, you do it. That's stunning and unique. That God, the Supreme King, went through by himself for both of them. And that's the gospel. It's not a cooperative effort. It's not a partnership. It's not a God helps those who help themselves. Abraham, I'm going through this for both of us. I will take upon myself the curse of the covenant for both of us. May I be cut off if I don't do my part. And may I be cut off if you don't do your part. Even if that means I have to die. So centuries later, the darkness came again over the whole land. And Jesus cried out, my God, why have you forsaken me? So the Messiah was cut off from the land of the living for the transgression of the people. God died and was cut off and trampled into dust, and darkness came upon him. Because he had cut an extraordinary deal with the people. So listen to this in Hebrews 6. When God made his promise to Abraham, since there was no one greater for him to swear by, he swore by himself, saying, I shall surely bless you and give you many descendants. Because God wanted to make the unchanging nature of his purpose very clear to the heirs of what was promised, he confirmed it with an oath. God did it so that we who have fled to take hold of the hope offered may be greatly encouraged. We have this hope as an anchor for the soul, firm and secure. It enters the inner sanctuary behind the curtain where Jesus went before us and he's entered on our behalf. So we have this hope as an anchor for our soul, firm and secure. That's what Abraham had, an anchor. So what are our anchors? Our looks, our talents, our resources, our friends, our family. These things are like water, aren't they? They ebb and they flow. They go right, they go wrong. They're no anchor. We need to go deeper. God is beneath the water of our circumstances. If you stay in the water, you'll be tossed around. So don't put your anchor there. An anchor in the water doesn't hold. We need to go deep and to live as though God's promises are the rocks beneath the water of circumstance. And we need to put our anchors there. Even Abraham said, okay, but how do I know? He's a guy like us. And God says to us, let me help you get the anchor deeper. So I guess here's how we apply this. Our problems come because we don't trust the promises of God. We don't have our anchor down below the water of circumstance. So do you know you're worried? Then you need an anchor in God and his wisdom. If we feel angry and bitter, we need an anchor in God and his justice. If we hate ourselves or have no confidence, we need an anchor in God and his love and his grace. So whatever our situation is, we need our anchors deep in God. And Abraham kept saying to God, how? How can I know? How can I be sure? How can this happen? I need to trust you more. God didn't say, how dare you question me? He said, look, I will show you. I will walk through the blood. And as soon as you say, I don't understand, but I want to. I don't hear your voice, but I'm trying. I don't sense your presence, but I'm waiting. That's the beginning of faith. So the way to get an anchor for your soul is forget for a moment about all of your questions, about creation, about abortion, about homosexuality, about denominations, about miracles. Because if Jesus is the one who he says he is, and he's made a covenant with the people like he's shown us, then everything else will fall into place. Because all God did was show Abraham the gospel. So in times of uncertainty and storm, and in times of comfort and calm, thank God for his faithfulness and keep your anchor deep in the rocks of God's promise. For God is faithful to all of his promises and loving towards all he has made.